Disrespect will take you places you can't get to from here. Disrespect entertains with a look at the challenges and sometimes the successes of people with disabilities who have taken from them or are denied the full choice of possibilities to affect for the better their own lives or the lives of those above them.
Disrespect introduces Jason Wallace and Crystal Vitelli, the parents of Kaylee Vitelli, a strong and determined couple whose life has changed. He works from home as an IT solutions and service man, and they're going to tell us about the changes in their life and the changes in Kaylee's life since she's come into the family. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing today?
Okay, it's a nice day.
It is. It's a gorgeous day out there today, definitely. I have my wife on the line as well. Go ahead, Crystal. Sorry, Angie, one second.
You know what? I have to deal with something, actually, because Kaylee's pump keeps going off. So if you just give me a minute.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Sorry about that. Yeah, Kaylee's machine's going off. So.
Okay. You told me what you did, and I forgot.
I'm in IT.
Okay.
Information technology. I do the...
service end of the business.
Solution and service, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... I mean, it's detrimentally affected, you know, everything in terms of your normal expectation of taking your child and being able to do the normal things you would want to do because she's hooked up to all the machines.
Okay.
So it extremely limits your ability to have just a simple babysitter come over and take care of the child while you want to go out for a little bit to have normal time out. So.
Okay.
Significantly reduces those things in life. Are you there, Crystal?
Yeah, no, I'm back now.
Okay.
We're going to let you come and go as the needs arise. And if you have to leave, and if you come back, tell us. And if you need filling in, tell us too, and we'll do that as well.
Okay.
It's not what I have to talk about that's the subject of the show. It's what you have to talk about.
Okay.
Okay. Crystal, can you tell us a little bit about Kaylee's life so far?
Well, it's definitely been up and down since she's come home from the hospital. We've been in the hospital pretty much once every month for about a week or so since she's been home.
How long has that been?
Over a year now. I guess it would be about 11 months she's been home.
All right.
First 3 to 4 months she was in the hospital.
Okay.
Since that... you know, she's changed a lot for sure.
Yeah.
She shows us that she fights every day. She has her good days, her bad days, and days that she just, you know, coos and yells and wants attention. And
really?
She loves music, so.
Oh, okay.
she definitely, she smiles, and she's going through some of the normal things that children would go through, you know, growing the teeth, so the teething process.
Right.
Getting bigger, but... you know, not the sitting up, crawling type of milestones. So it's a little bit harder that she's getting bigger, heavier, and it's almost like lifting like dead weight.
Mm-hmm.
So
she had a difficult birth?
No, the birth was pretty easy actually.
Good.
She was induced. The pregnancy went good. The doctor said everything was fine. The only thing that was, I guess, a little bit off was that she had to have forceps to come out because the heart rate went a little bit tacky. But, I mean, with her, knowing her syndrome now, that was probably normal for her.
And what is her syndrome?
Joubert syndrome.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I guess the best way to put that one is it's a genetic condition.
Right.
Only about... 400 to 500 cases around the world, 40 which are in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know a whole lot about it. They're still researching. Basically, it affects the part of the brain which controls your breathing, your walking, your talking, your ability to function normally.
Okay, so we have a basic understanding of Joubert syndrome. How old are the people born with Joubert syndrome?
It varies, because, again, depending on the severity of it,
right.
It can be detected early on, as early as in utero, to as late as probably 30s, 40s, 50s.
Okay.
For the most part, however, the severe cases where the vermis is absent...
What is the vermis?
The vermis is a communicating signal that sends the neurons to find their pathways to the brain, so
okay.
They tell you to cognitively think, walk, talk, vision, your breathing patterns, all those different kind of things.
So the vermis is a signal.
Yeah, it's okay. I guess the analogy is it's a bunch of horses, they're at a gate and they want to get out and race, but they can't get through the gate, so they have nowhere to go. They have to find another route around that thing that's blocking them.
Okay.
So when that type of thing happens, it causes misfires which lead to seizures.
Okay.
So, you know, all kinds of things can erupt as a response to it. Now, Kaylee, because she's got a markedly malformed brain stem as well, and hypoplastic cerebellum, which is the part that when you drink alcohol, that's the first part of your brain that's attacked by alcohol that makes you all dizzy and walk around silly and stuff.
Yeah.
Kaylee doesn't have that functioning piece of cerebellum. You know, that's that big piece that's the fourth largest part of the brain. So,
does that make her essentially drunk all the time?
Well, I mean, if you looked at her and her eyes going back and forth in a stagism, it's called, and some of the tongue movements that she does and stuff, yeah, you would think she's drunk, sure.
Okay, all right.
But essentially what it does is it just takes away from her capacity to communicate the proper signals, to coordinate the proper movements.
Well,
okay.
For instance, like I can give an example that probably works in her case. Like if you lay her on her stomach, you know, to give her tummy time, she'll kick her legs and she'll get her legs underneath her like she wants to crawl, but her arms are just laying there and they don't do nothing. So the hands aren't coordinating with the legs to give her the ability to crawl.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So
from that point, you found out, you didn't find out in utero. You say that it's possible to find out, but it sounds like you didn't find out in utero. Is there a specific test for it or something?
Well, what actually happens is if they suspect that there's a genetic condition or something indicating that something's wrong, they're supposed to go through certain protocols to do genetic testing, such as like CVS or the amnio, between the 11 and 18 weeks, which would indicate it if something's wrong. But in our case, they've seen cystic hygroma, which in most cases 50% of those children come out with a genetic condition. The protocol is to follow up with genetic testing. What happened was the cystic hygroma had went away, and they assumed everything was fine and didn't do any genetic testing in our case.
Yeah, and they were very, very, very uncharismatic in respect to the ultrasounds themselves being detailed, because had they been detailed, they would have seen that the fourth largest part of the brain was absent,
right.
And that's not something that is unmissable on ultrasound. So there's a lot of questions that are at play right now, and there's a lot of...
Who did the tests?
It was X-Ray Associates in Southlake Hospital in Newmarket.
Okay, all right.
So, you know, we're investigating those issues and how we're going to be dealing with those factors. Right now, the most important thing, obviously, is to keep Kaylee alive and make sure that the proper care is being provided. So.
Okay. So what are the hallmarks of her life so far, the developmental stages that she's gone through that babies go through?
Well, one of those actually was a New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
She rolled from her back to her stomach.
Mm-hmm.
That's about as far as a movement-wise milestone, I guess, she's come across.
Yeah, they're very, very, very limited. She doesn't grasp anything in her hand for any significant period of time.
Yeah.
She just grabs and then lets go as soon as the sensory feels something touching.
Oh, okay.
She doesn't want a nook or hold a nook in her mouth.
No, doesn't hold a bottle. Doesn't feed by way of oral. She feeds all by G tube, running 20 hours a day.
Oh, okay, all right.
So essentially the house is really an intensive care unit. It's got oxygen, it's got the monitors, and it's got the feeding pumps, and the ambu bag. We've had to resuscitate her four times already.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's we're hoping to see the milestones, but we're acceptant of what we are faced with right now, and we love her just the same. So,
I guess it's your love for her that keeps you going with this. Against these odds, it sounds like a 25 hours a day job.
It is.
Yeah. Okay.
There's no question about that one. So.
All right. So you've had some bad experiences when she's been moved from the Newmarket Hospital. The Newmarket Hospital, your experience has been of concerning care, it sounds like to me.
Well, yeah, it's. I think it's the fact that there's so many babies going through the hospital that they, if there's no telltale sign right away that tells them anything, then they simply just, move on through the process really fast. So the standard of care while Kaylee was there on the onset was that we weren't notified till about 11 days after she was born of any complications whatsoever, except that when she came out with meconium aspiration, she went into the ICU.
It was about a week, and they said she should be going home in a couple days.
Yeah.
And then one of the nurses noticed some neurological signs, so they started doing some testing.
Mm-hmm.
We kept asking questions, and nobody
no
was
answers.
Giving us answers, so we had to go higher up in the hospital. We got a meeting arranged. They sat down with us, and they said about roughly 2 weeks after she was born or so,
mm-hmm.
that she had Meckel Gruber and Dandy Walker. Didn't explain what it was, and...
sent us on our way.
At
4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday night.
Researched it when we got home, and it basically said that Meckel Gruber wasn't compatible with life.
Okay.
So it was, really hard for us. And I guess a couple days after that, she took an episode, as we call it, so the breathing, all of that,
mm-hmm.
And got rushed down to SickKids, which we were thankful for at the time.
Yeah.
And took them about 2 weeks to do all their testing. They sat down with us, with the genetics team, et cetera. And, we were really happy that she was there. And then they diagnosed her with the Joubert syndrome, which is, I guess, really similar to Meckel Gruber and Dandy Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Cousin, yeah.
Yeah, it's basically like a cousin syndrome to those ones.
Okay.
So.
All right. And after that, at SickKids, what happened?
Well, at that point in time, SickKids began on a mission of telling us that quality of life wouldn't be there and nothing would be normal. And, Kaylee would likely die at a very young age, within a year at least. And so we should consider, non-nutritional methods of terminating her life, which some parents do, is what they indicated. And we said, well, that's definitely out of the question.
So you're talking about drugs, are they?
Well, they wanted to starve her. They just wanted to take the food away, right? And just
So nutritional methods, not
non-nutritional methods. Yeah, yeah.
That's, well, if you starve her, that's nutritional.
Right. They wanted to take that away, right?
Okay.
So it was very troubling in respect to that. And then when we fought back, it was, at some point in time, we will make the decisions for you. And
you're going to have to consider cost over
care. Yeah, all of those things. How the tools in the bed could be better used for another child that
so
can
then,
be saved.
So then they considered and spoke to us about sending her home on palliative care with no machines, no nothing, no oxygen, and, letting her pass away in a comfortable setting.
Right.
And we said no.
That didn't come out first. That came out second.
Well, that came out after all of that, after we said no.
Right.
And so we fought for the machines and the oxygen and all of the stuff that she has here at home now. But during that period of time, Kaylee took, a bad episode. She had been on a breathing machine. Her color changed from pink to like a grayish white, like pale.
Yeah.
And, we looked at her and spoke to the doctors, and we thought, you know what, maybe they are right. Maybe this is the end for Kaylee. She's telling us that she's giving up. And that's what brought us to the heart transplant period of time. So.
Yeah.
Now how about a break with Kenny Wayne and Thin Line. Thank you.
in line, didn't know which way to go. I've been walking thin line, didn't know which way to go. People tell me this and that, baby, I'll go with the flow. Believe me, people, I know it's right. Next time you see me, you see I'll be going strong. Stay in the middle, don't move left or right. It's hard for me to determine which way I move tonight. In line, I ain't walking that line no more. I'll choose left or right now, 'cause I'm tired of keeping score. If I stay in the middle, don't move left or right, it's hard for me to determine which way I'm tonight. In line, I ain't walking that line no more. I'll choose left or right now, 'cause I'm tired of keeping score.
You've been listening to Father Jason Wallace and Mother Crystal Vitelli of baby Kaylee Vitelli and her sojourn through disability and treatment at Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto.
We were sitting in the room on a Saturday afternoon, and this doctor, who's a weekend doctor, comes in and says, "Well, you realize that, you know, Kaylee has, it's her journey is over. You know, you
right.
need to accept that." And we said, was it upsetting as that was for them to say it that way and whatnot, we said, well, you know, it was just a spur-of-the-moment thought. It was, well, then we want our organs to save another child. And,
right.
you know, and we know the kidneys are compromised, but the heart is not. And we'd read about a story about a child that was in that hospital that needed a heart around the same size and within the same age frame as Kaylee.
Mm-hmm.
So we the minute we said that, they said no. And we said, well, why not? Why, you know, let's send the red light off for us. Why would you not want to save another child if you're going to ultimately lose this one?
Yeah.
And they said, well, it's not the way it's done and so forth, and started fighting with us. So what we did at that point in time is made some contacts with, we made three or four contacts with internal people over the next day or so, trying to initiate this to happen. Spoke with the Trillium transplant team in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning with the president of the Trillium team, and explained to him the circumstances and so forth. And he was more than happy to do DCD, death by cardiac donation.
There was a timeline that played an issue with that as well.
Yeah, but SickKids was refusing to agree to that. So we thought that as suspicious too. So what we did is the next day we went and contacted Michelle Mandel of the Toronto Sun and said to her, listen, not knowing this would be as big as a story as it turned into, but certainly just hoping that her you know, call or her article, something would be written small that would be big enough at least to let the public know that this is happening at this hospital and that, you know, we're going to lose our daughter according to them and their, you know, their top physicians.
And somebody else is going to lose their child, too.
Sorry?
And someone else is going to lose their child, too.
Exactly. So.
And then SickKids came out after the article got published by Michelle and said that Kaylee's heart wasn't strong enough, wasn't viable to donate.
Yeah.
Because it had problems type of thing. So then we actually got in contact with one of our family lawyers. He made a call to SickKids, and then SickKids came out and said, you know, we'll go ahead with it.
Oh.
Yeah. So once that was the threat. It was, you know, there's nothing wrong with this little girl's heart. If she's going to pass away, then how dare you suggest that, you know, go through with this. So then they were kind of backed into the corner with the media standing out front of their window, you know, with the cameras and all that stuff. And they're sitting there going, oh, damn, you know what I mean? Now we're in a really stuck situation. So what they did is essentially we were in the hospital on that Monday night and they before the transplant, and they said put a security on the door, and they said to us, well, why don't you guys go home and get some sleep, you know, because it's going to be a rough day for you tomorrow, get cleaned up and everything else. So
right.
Everything, you know, and that's fine. So then what happened was we decided to leave, but we came back into the room around 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And upon the arrival at our daughter's bedside, they had discontinued her life support again, like the breathing machine.
Again?
They did this the first time they did it without our consent.
Right.
So we turned around and said to them, what the hell is going on? Well, they acted surprised, and they said, oh, that wasn't, you know, I don't know what happened here, but...
They said nobody went into the room, and even now, if you were to confront them about it, they suggest that there's no security sitting in front of the door.
Even though there was security, yeah.
So.
And so we asked the security guard coming out of the room, we said, can you tell us who entered this room? And he said, nobody has. And I said, okay, so the only person in there is this nurse. And
all right.
And she said, he said, yeah. So then at that point in time, we met with the hospital. Well, tried to get the medical book from beside the bed to find out who signed that order.
Mm-hmm.
And it was ripped out of my wife's arms by a staff member, and she ran out of the room. Next time we saw the book was about 2.5 hours later in a meeting with the manager of the unit, who said it was a junior RT's mistake, didn't realize that they shouldn't have touched the machine, and so they inadvertently turned it off, and we do apologize.
Was it out of the room, the machine, too?
No, the machine was in the room beside Kelly's bed. So we think that that was an attempt, okay, to essentially get what they wanted out of it, which was Kaylee to pass on. They didn't have to do the transplant. Certain things wouldn't be exposed.
Okay.
And the reason we believe this is because the very next day the day the transplant was going to take place, Kaylee was gray, lethargic. The machine was breathing for her, the 20 breaths per minute. You could put ice on her chest and she would not respond, okay?
Right.
So when it's time for the transplant to move out of the room, the goodbye room, and go down to the operating theater, Dr. Hellman comes in the room and he injects something into Kaylee's tubing. So I asked him what he was doing and he said, oh, it's a comfort drug for transport. I said, oh, okay, well, whatever. So then when we got down to the operating theater, it was, you walked in and there was a blue sheet on one side and something on the other side, and they made it look like another patient was over there waiting for the heart, you know what I mean, like
okay.
All that kind of stuff. So they put her on the table, they took the machine off, and Kaylee pepped up.
They gave her something else, though.
Yeah, they gave her something else, but she woke up, she stayed awake, she stayed responsive, all this stuff was good. But an hour and 6 minutes later, they called it off and said, okay, it's obviously not going to happen, so forth, left the room. So we were worried about the other baby because we knew that it took 2.5 hours pre-surgery, even before they cut into Kaylee if she was to pass away, to take the heart, to prep the other baby. So
yeah.
We were really concerned. So we went back and we asked questions. They had not touched that baby whatsoever.
All right. So we thought Kaylee a stimulant?
I'm sorry?
You think they gave Kaylee a stimulant?
Well, we know that they gave Kaylee morphine and possibly fentanyl during the time period that she was going to these lethargic states days before the end of journey complication happened.
What makes you suspect fentanyl?
Well, they told us they were going to use a local anesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
We found out later that they actually used morphine, which is a respiratory suppressant drug, and she has a respiratory condition. So
yeah, okay. Why would you do that to a child? So,
and what made you suspect fentanyl? I say that because fentanyl's been involved in another
Well, we suspect some heavy form of sedation greater than morphine, and that would only lead us to that, you know, obviously explanation. But I mean, and I guess the reason why we're concerned is because...
So she fought both these for days.
I'm sorry?
So she fought both these drugs for days.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, she fought them, definitely. The machine was keeping her alive while they were injecting her with them, and they gave her some kind of a stimulant, in my opinion, as she was going down to the theater, and when she got into the theater, they gave her another stimulant, which woke her up. They did not want to do this transplant. This was something that, you know, by hell and high water, they weren't going to do this. So they made it look like they were the good doctors and that it was a big miracle that Kaylee survived. Mm-hmm. The only miracle is that we as parents fought against the hospital that from day one wanted this child to die and not to be a survivor based on her quality of life, you know, future. And we've learned subsequent to that is, in fact, what they want, because she had another episode, went back to... the kids just recently. She was on full life support at Southlake Hospital, transported.
Mm-hmm.
When she got down there, the minute that we left the room for any significant period of time...
We left the room around about 2 o'clock in the morning to rest in the waiting room just down the hallway.
Yeah.
She was on the life support. They had given... Well, she was on a morphine drip. They had given her ketamine, fentanyl, and propofol.
Propofol, yeah.
So those are the drugs that she was on while she was on the life support. What had happened is, according to the notes and the nurses that we spoke to the next day, that they stopped all those medications by about 1:30, 2 o'clock, so around the time that we went to sleep, and they had the life support taken off of her completely by just before 4 a.m. So within 2 hours or less, they had her off of the life support.
Without our consent, without our consult, and we told them we were in the waiting room getting some rest, and we would expect any issues to change that we would want to be notified. When we came in at 7 o'clock in the morning, this child was in so much distress that it was unbelievable. They had her offer oxygen, which was 24-hour-a-day prescription from day one for Kaylee to give her reserve because of her breathing pattern. She stopped breathing about 100 times an hour. They had her off that. And they had her excubated and just laying there, essentially with nothing on her, waiting for her to die.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And we fought back. And the minute we fought back, the police were called, and I got escorted off the property. So
I requested a meeting.
Did they say why they'd escorted you off the property as opposed to your wife?
No.
He's the voice. And he's the one that stands up most of the time.
Okay.
Because he speaks, I guess, more fluently, so usually, you know, we both speak ahead of time. This is how we both feel. He speaks for the both of us.
Okay.
So I guess that's probably why they go after him.
Okay.
But when he's not there, obviously, you know, I'm the voice as well. So, you know, I can be just as firm as him as well.
Mm-hmm. The Metro Police are actively investigating them right now for... criminal negligence causing bodily harm. So we're awaiting the results of that investigation, and then we will determine what our next action is going to be after that. But there's definitely a history with this hospital that we've learned from other parents of what they're doing to these genetically challenged or disabled you know, babies that have no future. They try their best.
Let's return to the hospital definition, not normal, which is very disturbing.
Well, they suggest it as no quality of life. But I don't think that a hospital or a doctor should have a right to suggest that your child has no quality of life. I think that's the parent's decision.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. And ultimately should be up to us. And when we choose to make that decision, they should place their hands upon the child, the way to save the child, not to interfere with the child's life. And not say to parents, you're causing another child harm because you won't give up on this, your daughter who's not going to have a future.
There should be no difference in treatment between what they call a normal child and a child with no quality of life. It should all be the same.
They're all children.
Exactly.
Yep.
And they should not be using the excuse, well, we didn't do this because we didn't feel that it would benefit the child, because that's the excuse that the doctors use.
Yeah, definitely. The other thing that they do is they continuously lie to us about these seizure behaviors. In, at South Lake Hospital, this last incident, three doctors, including the chief pediatrics at South Lake, witnessed Kaylee having seizures.
Right.
And put her on Dilantin as a response to what they were witnessing.
Mm-hmm.
Upon being on Dilantin and then afterwards, about an hour later, she had seizures on the other side. They had to give her more Dilantin, and by that time it had done something to her respiratory system.
The seizures had.
Not the drugs, but the seizures. They were just too much. She was just,
mm-hmm.
you know, went catatonic, I guess you'd call it. So they had to put her on the life support and send her to Toronto. So when she got there, sick kids, oh, no seizure, no nothing, no this, no that. So we asked the kids to keep her on. From January on, we've asked them to put her on anti-seizure medication because of what we witnessed and because of what other hospitals have witnessed. And no, they refused to. So we say, well, you know, do EEGs and all this stuff. So they did the EEG back in January.
Yeah.
They sent us home saying, that's perfectly fine. Nothing's wrong. It's good. We find out from the attending doctor the night that Kaylee gets to the hospital on the life support this past time that, in fact, back in January, the test said she was having sharp T waves and spikes indicator of seizures back in January.
All right.
So he then, when we confront sick kids with that, that doctor then backs off, or not backs off, but his boss steps in and says, that doctor doesn't know how to read documents.
Oh, okay.
So they took her off the Dilantin. She's not on any anti-seizure medication now.
She's not?
No.
She's at home?
Yeah.
You can't get Dilantin for her, or you don't want to, or you're not prepared to administer it at home?
They're not prepared because no specialist is willing to say she had seizures, because SickKids is hiding it.
Okay.
So.
All right.
And I think it's atrocious. I think what they're doing is below standard of care.
You've noticed a deterioration in Kaylee since then.
Oh, we've noticed that they damaged her when this last issue, yeah, for sure.
What have you noticed?
Well, we noticed that for some period of time, her breathing patterns are changed now to sometimes be more, I can't explain the respiratory circumstance, but her personality for a very long while afterwards was non-existent. So,
okay.
I mean, we don't know to what further extent beyond that neurologically damage was done, but there was visual damage in terms of how Kaylee would normally be.
Okay.
So,
do you have a contact with the police who could comment on the progress of this investigation, or simply
Tony,
when it's over?
Tony Raiolo, I guess it is. Yeah.
And he is
the detective at 52 Division Family Services.
Okay. Thanks.
And Detective Mike Leone. I have to admit that my conversations with them have been strenuous, to say the least, because you are dealing with a hospital that has a very, very powerful grip within society.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they're...
I don't think anybody's indicting the hospital here. From what you've told me, you've had problems with Dr. Hillman, and this isn't the first I've heard of problems with Dr. Hillman.
Well, I think that it's I think that Dr. Hillman and his tactics that he used back then, and Dr. Lee's tactics, and all the other doctors that subsequently are getting involved with Kaylee, I think it is a protocol in respect to SickKids' call, and I think that it comes from the higher echelons, and I think that it comes also possibly from the Ontario government and their standard of request of care, you know, where how much do they want to put into these children that don't have the quote-unquote quality of life, or are going to be tax-paying citizens, or so forth. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got to read into some of the protocols that are out there, such as in the Ontario Health Act. It says any baby any infant that's predisposed to a respiratory condition is not eligible for monitor funding for home. Well,
okay.
How many infants do you know are predisposed?
Right.
You know what I mean? So you have to ask yourself that question. It's a terrible circumstance when the disabled are, you know, imagine if you're, you know, 20, 30 years old and you're disabled, you become disabled. Yeah, okay, the system's there for you. But as infants,
mm-hmm.
you know, the only voice is us. And when we speak up, we seem to be shut down or attacked, one of the two, so.
Let's take one more break with Omar and the Howlers, Lowdown Dirty Blues. You've been listening to Father Jason Wallace and Mother Crystal Vitelli of baby Kaylee Vitelli and her sojourn through disability and treatment at Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto.
What you have to ask yourself is this. Jeff, if you have a circumstance where a crime has been committed mm-hmm. and you have a video mm-hmm. of that crime and you have a person from the Attorney General's office who I will leave unnamed but certainly has reviewed the tape mm-hmm. and has said that this hospital stepped out of the bounds of the mm-hmm. law. They pushed it this time mm-hmm. in respect to what they did with Kaylee. They put her in a torturous situation, according to litigators who have reviewed the video.
Okay.
The Metro Police have been investigating this for the past 2 weeks mm-hmm. with really no update to us as parents, except that we take it seriously and we are investigating it. But would you not want the police to enact a little bit faster? Because if these doctors are still on service at Sick Kids and they've in fact committed a crime...
Mm-hmm.
Would we want them near our children,
mm-hmm.
or would we want to suspend those services until the police are formally completed their investigation and determine whether or not charges are going to be laid in this matter?
That sounds like a court order.
Yeah, but what we have is the police acting the way that they are in terms of very distant to the victim's parents in this matter is troubling to me. I have to be completely... honest that I feel when I call and ask the questions, I feel like I'm doing something wrong. I'm challenging when I shouldn't be.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But I feel that if I just give up and we say, all right, police, we'll leave it in your hands and you'll make the decision, then the decision is going to be the ultimate outcome, which is nobody's in the wrong, just we're wild and crazy parents. You know what I mean?
So, well, I can understand what you're saying, but the hospital's... to my mind, is clearly in violation, is clearly a public institution, and it's clearly in violation of the AODA now.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that even before any other measures are established for censuring these doctors, that the hospital would certainly respond to the outflow of that much money very quickly.
Well, I think they will as well, right?
So, yeah.
Hoping that happens. But, you know, every day... for us, when Kaylee goes down, is a scary day for us. It's like no more do we believe that taking Kaylee to the great hospital for Sick Kids is going to be the best ultimate outcome for her. We're in fear of the circumstances when we get through those doors. We're in fear that those circumstances will be done without us present, and if necessary, removed from the circumstance. So.
Do you have plans to see that she's sent elsewhere, or do you have plans to live elsewhere?
Well, at this point in time, we've spoken to every hospital across Ontario and some in the United States, and you know their position is, Sick Kids is a world-renowned hospital. I mean, what option do you have? And the only other option is CHEO, which
what's CHEO?
Children's Hospital Ottawa.
Okay.
And that apparently has affiliation to Sick Kids, and they. It's just that there's been such a stigmata created about Sick Kids and how greatness they are that people forget that this hospital has not notified the public of its, in 5 years, 6 years now, of its mortality rates for their NICU.
Okay.
Why? What are they hiding? Susan Nellis was charged with murdering children at that hospital, but acquitted, and nobody was ever convicted.
Right.
Why? These are questions that we shouldn't just say, oh, it shows in the paper, it shows up on the radio, and now it's here one day and it's gone the next because it was a shooting at Jane and Finch, or there was something going on that was, you know, more important. The Prime Minister landed, oh, my God. Instead of putting the real power behind what needs to be done, like they did with David Suzuki and the IDOC in Calgary, or what was it, Calgary Health, I guess it was, or I can't remember.
Stollery in Edmonton? Stollery Hospital?
Yeah, Children's Hospital, yeah.
Oh, Children's Hospital.
And there was something going on with children there, and David Suzuki looked into it, investigated it, and it came out. It came out what was really going on.
Okay.
So.
All right. And none of the American hospitals have come through for you?
Oh, the American Children's Hospital in Washington, D.C., has been interested in having a look at Kaylee, but... so far, Kaylee's not really been that stable enough to make any transport over to the States yet.
Okay.
So we're kind of, it's every 90 days roughly, Kaylee takes a bad turn, and it ends up, you know, hospitalization, ambulance, air, all of that stuff.
Well, that varies between, like, 30 to 90 days. But,
yeah,
like I said, usually it's about once a month. Severe episodes are probably 60 to 90 days.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
all right.
There's no real stability, if you get what we're saying, to be able to go to any other hospital. We're not left with that option. You know, Southlake has, you know, done so far, you know, with Kaylee, a good job. And they've been responsive, and unfortunately, everything that another outside hospital does for Kaylee, sick kids, changes it, reduces it, takes it away, and says, nope, there's nothing more that can be done.
Right. So, I have to share with you, and I don't expect you to comment on or endorse my personal point of view, but the first thing I thought of when I heard about this issue of quality of life in Kaylee was that the quality of life of a doctor who lets babies die is questionable too. Does that mean they're not entitled to life support?
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways to interpret this, but basically what it comes down to, the frightening thing it comes down to for me is not normal. If you're not normal, you don't deserve to live.
Yeah, and that's the wrong way.
I don't like the prospect of broadening those criteria in the interest of saving money.
No.
No.
Definitely not. And I think that money should never play a part in whether or not a child should have a right to live or the right to services within our great land. It was deemed by forefathers years ago that these would be the rules. And some people like to break them and maneuver around them so that they can achieve whatever mission that they're trying to achieve, as opposed to you got to remember, if sick kids was losing people or children all the time, they wouldn't be the greatest hospital in the world. But because they selectively discount the services for others that would be in need and entitled, they give those other services to those that can be fixed, and then they look like the greatest thing in the world. So
that's true. I think you've raised another issue too, is that the definition of medical care, it seems to be one of the issues of our time. Is medical care for fixing people, or is medical care for allowing them to have a better life?
Well,
and as long as the definition is fixing people, people who aren't normal are at grave risk, and people with any kind of disability are by implication at grave risk, in my opinion.
Well, you know, the thing, Jeff, is it's not my first rodeo, as they would say, with respect to the healthcare system. My family was, highlighted all over the media in 2001 because a hospital in Oshawa decided for its infinite wisdom that they would diagnose a brain bleed as a mental breakdown and send a patient home and turn him away 48 times until his brain came out the back of his head because the blood clot pushed it, called herniation.
Really?
And he died. He died at 50 years of age.
50?
And the hospital was sued, and the hospital settled out of court. But the system itself told you a lot. My father lived about 10 minutes away from the hospital in Oshawa, and
that was your dad.
Yeah, and the report, the coroner's report from Dr. Barry McClelland was he died of blunt force trauma caused from without on or about March 20th of 2000, or 2001, and nobody's ever explained the blunt force trauma to us. He was a patient in hospital.
Right.
Nobody's ever explained to us why it said on the report emergency imaging required, further imaging required because of a subdural hematoma suspected. Yet it wasn't done. He was released. And why he was turned away 48 times to the point that, cost him his life.
Yeah.
Cost him his life. And then my mom, she has had 13 heart attacks, four times. And when I got to the hospital in Ajax and seen my mother was on a bypass machine trying to breathe, you know, with the big, big machine getting you air, BiPAP. And it was Sunday, the doctor said to me and my family in the hallway, they said, well, she's knifing. Knifing means you're going to be here 1 minute and possibly gone the next. You're not stable. You're critical.
All right.
And we asked my mother, do you want to live? And she said, save me, is her words.
Really?
So what we did at that point is I looked to the doctor and I said to him, did you hear what my mother said? And he said, I heard her. And I said, save her. He says, not that simple. And I said, well, what's not that simple? It's a Sunday. There's no beds available in Toronto, blah, blah, blah. I took him by his little white coat, threw him through a door, and I said to him, "You heard what my mother said? We sued Oshawa Hospital for killing my father. Unless you want to find yourself in that same circumstance, you better move my mother." They moved my mother within 1 hour to Toronto, and they saved her life.
Okay.
But the point is, why should we have to fight like that? Why should we have to be aggressive for a system that we pay for as taxpayers? You know, it's not like I'm a jobless individual or an uneducated person. You know what I mean? Like, I've done my dues in society, and I've paid my taxes into this program, and my family should have just as much right, regardless of any circumstances, to that care.
And I think most Ontarians would express the same point of view.
Yeah.
And I think you put it very clearly. Is there anything that we haven't discussed that you want to say before we close the interview?
I don't know. I think I'm fine. I hope that the police make the right decision here and hold them responsible. If not, we will be taking action to charge them under a Justice of the Peace Act anyway. So I don't know. Crystal?
I really don't have anything to say except that I think people should keep an open mind instead of, you know, just saying that Sick Kids or any other hospital is a great hospital and not look at the possibility of bad things happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So bad things happen in good places sometimes, and that doesn't mean you should ignore them.
No, exactly.
No. Yeah.
No. And the other thing that we need to really look at, Jeff, and the public needs to understand this, is when a life-ending decision is to be made, the parents must be consulted.
Oh, yeah.
Unless they are in some way or another in harm of their child and have been told by a court to remain away. And, you know, when that is not the circumstances and it's you have every right to be the parent of that child, you must fight for the right to make those decisions for your child and not be excluded and certainly not be removed from the circumstances.
Yeah, I couldn't put it better myself. I really appreciate your taking the time for this interview today.
No problem. Thank you so much, Jeff. And thank you to your listeners, and hopefully there's a voice out there that wants to engage in you know, making a change, because that's what this is about. So,
thanks, Jason, and thanks, Crystal, too.
No problem.
We spoke with the police after Jason Wallace and Crystal's interview, and the police told us that it might take a long time to resolve this issue, and we spoke with the pediatric intensive care unit's doctor, the chief, Christopher Parcheron. This is what he had to say.
Rob speaking.
Hi, Dr. Parcheron. My name is Jeff Langhorne, and I'm on the radio. I've recorded our conversation for broadcast, and I'm curious if you want to comment.
Sorry, you've recorded our conversation, or
I am recording. Yeah. And I am curious if you would like to make a comment on the progress of Kaylee Vitelli at the Sick Children's Hospital.
I have no comment to make.
Well, that's all we need. Thanks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Father Jason Wallace and Mother Crystal Vitelli of baby Kaylee Vitelli and her sojourn through disability and treatment at Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto. Disrespect has given our time for the news review to Kaylee Vitelli. But going out, we have Jimmy Thackeray, Trouble Man.
Just when you thought you had the world on the string, bad luck and trouble didn't mean a thing. Now you got the misery and the worried mind. Don't get your pants in love and don't be lying. I got the answer about the thing that you do. I'm not advised about what's troubling you. Just put your pen right in your tummy hand. Trouble Man. Yeah. Trouble Man.
fix it now if you ain't broke. What do you got to do? Money, money, all the trouble now, now. Come on, man, I've got nothing but time. I'm your trouble man. I said I'm your trouble man.
If you can't access a Disrespect broadcast, you can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.